Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. I'm delighted to say that this podcast is sponsored by Peanut. Peanut is the app that helps you meet like-minded women who are trying to conceive, pregnant, or already mums. Peanut provides a safe space for women to build friendships, ask questions, and find support. Introducing you to women nearby who are at a similar stage in their journey, Peanut provides access to a community of women who are there to listen, share information, and offer valuable advice. Whether it's understanding IVF, PCOS, miscarriage, or pregnancy and beyond, Peanut is a place to connect with women who understand. I used to go to a weekly rhyme time class with Ren, and between the babies crying, the toddlers singing, and all the general noise and shenanigans, it could be really hard to stop and chat to some of the other mums. So when one of them connected with me on Peanut, it was fab. We made a beeline for each other at the next class and even went for a coffee together afterwards. Because of the app, it meant there was a friendly face in the room, which I have to say was just really lovely. You can download the app for free today. Head to peanut.app.link/finallypregnant or search for Peanut in your app store. And when you do, make sure you head over to the Finally Pregnant group. Hello there, how are you doing? I hope that you are okay. Whether you are new here or you are a regular listener, I just want to say a huge thank you for tuning in. I really appreciate it. I know that there isn't necessarily as much time to listen to podcasts and things these days. So the fact that you're here really is lovely. Thank you so, so much. I'm really looking forward. I think I always say this, but I always am looking forward to sharing today's episode with you. It's a man. I know that hardly ever happens, but I'm really pleased that it is happening because, as many of you I know will agree, we want to hear from more and more men when it comes to fertility and pregnancy and parenting. And that's what my guest, Chris Lawson, thinks too, which is why, having been through a 5-year trying to conceive journey to finally have his daughter, Rosie, who is about 11 months old now, he's created a brand new podcast called IVF Dad. It's not just about being a dad, though, as he will tell you in a bit. It's about the whole fertility process, and I have no doubt it will be incredibly useful to so many. In other news, we bought Ren a little table and chairs for the kitchen, and I would love to say that it's made mealtimes a dream, but sadly, not so much the case. It's very hit and miss. It was fun the other day. Bob, Ren and I were sat around the table having a little drink while she was having a little snack, and Bob and I were there with our knees in our chins, basically. And yeah, I just sat there and I thought, this is the memories, isn't it? This is the good times. So yeah, it's all good fun. She's still not walking, and I know I've said it before that it's fine, but it is starting to affect little bits here and there. For example, she is going up in her nursery class from January, and I just feel really protective about her because she'll probably be the only one that isn't walking. I actually need to ask them that question. Just things like that. So I know there's still time between now and January, so it's fine. But I know, I just feel a bit more protective of her. I don't know. Anyway, speaking of January, and that's such a loose connection, apologies for that, but I'm going to go with it. I think I mentioned last week that my Finally Pregnant yoga sessions has sold out already. Can't really believe it still. We are looking to introduce an extra course into January, so make sure you're signed up to my emails. Link for everything that I mention in the show notes, as always, or you can head over to catstrawbridge.com. Also, come and join me over on Instagram and all other socials as well. Prior to that, there is also a taster session on December the 19th. So that's a Saturday morning. It will be at 10:30, and it follows my coping with an anxious pregnancy workshop, which is at 9:30 on the same morning. So the workshop I'm doing, it's an hour long and I'll be taking you through some exercises and giving you lots of tips to help support you through your pregnancy, given what you might have been through to get there, given all that this year has brought with it, and potentially because there are some triggers that may come up due to the time of year. As I said, head to my website, catstrawbridge.com/December workshop to sign up for that today. And you can also sign up to the taster session for the yoga sessions there too. I know you've heard me say this next bit before, but this time I was thinking, how can I say this differently? This time I want you to really ask yourself, have you subscribed to the podcast? Have you rated it? And have you reviewed it? And if you're not saying yes, I'm saying to you, please, please do it. The review thing I appreciate is harder if you're not on Apple, but you can send me a DM on Instagram. You can email me with a review. You can do it over on my Facebook page, facebook.com/trying years. Just maybe, I just love hearing back from you and hearing that it's hitting the right note as well. And it means that I can share them. Happy to do that anonymously. And I can encourage other people to listen as well. So I would really appreciate it if you could, yeah, like subscribe, rate and review. Go on, go on. You know you want to. That's it though, other than to say that I really hope that you enjoy the conversation that I have with Chris. And yeah, I'll speak to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye. Hi there, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm good, Kat. It's nice to talk to you properly.
Oh, it's lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Now, our paths crossed only quite recently, isn't that right? Mm-hmm. I think, did you start following me on Instagram and I followed you back and had a listen to your trailer and then we, sounds so weird, but slid into DMs in the non-weird way. And we had a chat a while ago, and now we're officially talking for the podcast.
Exactly. You see, that's how relationships are made these days, aren't they? Yeah. I listened to your podcast a while back, actually, and I heard you on a couple others, and I thought, yeah, we definitely need to have a chat, because it was definitely one of the most sort of insightful ones that I heard when I was sort of going through sort of some of the, how can I get the story out there for IVF dad? And I thought, God, we must connect.
Brilliant. And here we are. And the name of the title, IVF dad, spoiler alert, it worked eventually, but you went through a heck of a journey to have your little girl, didn't you? I'd be really, really interested to kind of have you talk us through that.
So Rosie was born January 2020 and she was our 18th embryo. It was such a roller coaster. I mean, everyone that sort of is in this environment knows it, but it was such a roller coaster ride. We left it quite late. I met Trish, my wife now, but she was sort of girlfriend at the time, about sort of 6-7 years ago. And we sort of thought, right, I was about 44, she was 39. We thought, we've just got to get on with it. We've got no time to mess around. We've just got to crack on. And that's a great thing, isn't it? When you meet someone a bit later on in life, you do sort of, you can make those decisions a little bit quicker. And we sort of knew that there was a ticking clock. So we tried naturally for a while. That wasn't going anywhere. So we went to the Lister Hospital to get sort of checked out and see what our options were. And then we just started on the journey. But I don't think either of us at that time thought we would still be cracking away at it 5 years down the line. And when you hear some of those percentage chances of, well, if you're over 40 and if Trish is coming up to 40, then really it's about 5% chance per cycle. It's just, until you're in this environment, you don't really expect that, I don't think. We did everything that was asked of us. We did all the tests and we found that there was a bit of me and a bit of Trish holding us back. So they said, right, we want to do ICSI, and you think, well, what the hell is ICSI? And then you realise how much you start to learn about this whole different area. And we did one round and then we did another and nothing was happening. And Trish was getting huge amounts of eggs and so maybe like 13, 14 at a time, which sort of age-defying in a way. And then we were getting a lot of embryos. So we were getting upwards of like 5 or 6 embryos. And we thought, well, you know, one of these is going to work. And then after a while, it was just like, my God, this is still not happening for us. Along the way, we did manage to get pregnant with twins and both miscarried. And that was just a devastating experience, as everyone that goes through miscarriages know. But we, dusted ourselves off, tried again. And finally, we got to a point of just thinking, well, do you know what? We might have to go down egg donation or sperm donation and try that approach. We're probably on about embryo life 13 by now, maybe 14. And just sort of thinking, God, how resilient can we be in order to get through this? Plus, also, it's a increasing dent in your bank balance. The life savings are just going down and down and down. So in about sort of 2018, we went for one more round. We were getting married that year. We were getting married in October. And we just thought, do you know what? Let's just take a break, take a step back, put the embryo that was successful in the freezer and enjoy our wedding, have a drink, have a dance, and then we come back to it in sort of 2019. I think both of us quietly were thinking, do you know what? Once we're married and we're a bit more relaxed, then it's bound to happen. And we went through one more fresh round in 2019, and again, about 9 or 10 eggs, about 4 embryos, and we sent them all off for DNA testing, and they all came back negative. And we were just like, oh my God, we're going to have to go down the egg donation route or the sperm donation. And we thought, well, we've got one in the freezer. And the consultant said, look, you just never know. And it wasn't a top quality one, but you just never know. And we put that one back, and that was a miracle. That was Rosie. So a fantastic ending to what was a long journey with lots of ups and downs.
Gosh, yeah. So that spanned 5 years, you say?
Pretty much, yeah.
And as you say, multiple rounds. I'm so sorry to hear that you miscarried twins. That's just heartbreaking. And taking a bit of time out, which, you know, I definitely, that helped out. Well, we just needed it, to be honest. It wasn't necessarily about helping us, although I'm sure it did help us. We just needed it. And then your one embryo just, yeah, trying it out. And then Rosie, like, that's amazing. And so she is, as we talked about just before we started recording, this is her first Christmas coming up. So she's 11 months old. Is that right? Just before
exactly.
Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And talk to me about the pregnancy. And one of the really important things, which won't have escaped the listeners, is that you are talking about all of this from the male perspective, which is so important, because even though we know more and more people are talking about trying to conceive and infertility and pregnancy loss, which is incredible, but only if that's right for you to do that. No one should ever feel any pressure about doing that. But there are more people talking about it, but we still are lacking when it comes to hearing the male perspective. So it's so important that you are talking about this, number one. But tell us from that perspective, like, what was the pregnancy like? How did you feel when you got that positive pregnancy test? How did you feel going into the scans and before the bump was there, when the bump was there? Like, tell us about that period of your journey.
I mean, honestly, I'm just grinning now, Kat, just even the thought of it. But I think everyone that goes through it also knows that once you've done this journey, the pressure is just built up and built up and built up. It's quite fascinating, actually. So when we had Rosie, when we found out we were pregnant and we went through the obligatory 6 pregnancy tests that you always do just to be really, really sure that you're not imagining it. And it was sort of coming up, and we were going over to see Trisha's dad in Ireland. It was probably quite early. It was about 5 weeks. And we were saying, well, do we tell him or don't we tell him? And we were due to go in the following week for our first scan. And we got to Ireland, and I'm like, do you know what? This is amazing. And we don't know when we'll see him next. So we should just tell him. And then we were going to go back and tell him on the last evening. And then Trish started bleeding, and we had to pull over the car. We're in the middle of rural Ireland. And she goes, oh my God, I think I'm losing the embryo. Again, it was just one of those moments where we just sat there and we just thought, well, what the hell do we do? And we rang the clinic, and we were due to fly back at like 6 a.m. the next morning anyway. And they said, look, just come straight in. There's nothing else that will happen. So come in and we'll have a scan and check. So we had pretty much a sleepless night, and we went in to the clinic, and I'm pretty much, already assumed that here we go again. And they went, no, look, there's a heartbeat. And we'd already almost jumped to the negative conclusion rather than the positive conclusion, because we're almost programmed to it over the last sort of 4 or 5 years. And then go, oh, no, actually, do you know what? Bleeding in pregnancy is much more common than you think. And she looks healthy and she looks strong and the lining's fine. And then I started to believe a little bit more after that. Each time we had an appointment, either at the Lister or at the NHS, I just got slightly more and more confident. But to be fair, I think I drove Trish mad, because the amount of times I go, are you okay? Everything all right? And without sort of saying, she goes, I'm fine, I'm fine. But it's a lot of pressure, isn't it? Because you've put everything into it. And when you get to that point, and obviously everyone is delighted for you, but we pretty much came off social media for a year because we just didn't want pictures of Trish sort of growing and growing and more people go, wow. We just wanted it to happen. And until we had Rosie in our arms, we just still properly didn't believe. You know, I think there was still part of us thought, oh, my God, is this going to come true or not? So it can be a very, very stressful time. But one of the things that struck me when you were saying this about the male perspective. So I sat in those waiting rooms of the clinics and Trish would get called for blood or she would get called for a follow-up appointment and I'd be sat in the waiting room giving as much moral support as I could, and there'd be like six other women waiting for her appointments and maybe another guy, and we'd both be looking at our phones individually and we wouldn't talk. And then even when you came down to collection day and you're going down to do your side of it, do your sperm sample and stuff like that, and there'd be a couple other blokes and you don't talk and you come up, and I just thought, this is lonely at the best of times, but blokes are so rubbish about communicating this. And I thought it would be great to give a male perspective. And also, I do think for you know, the female partners, it's useful to understand it from a male perspective as well, not just to help those guys out there. But I do hope it can. That's the whole point of doing the podcast, to almost just provide a voice of someone who has gone through it, as that feeling of being a bit of a spare part, questioning your own identity as a man, as a partner, as a potential father, but also just trying to lighten some of those moments as well about, yeah, how does it feel to actually inject your partner with hormone drugs that is going, not there, not there, you know, give me more notice or whatever it may well be.
Absolutely. And we need more of that. We really, really do. And we will talk a little bit more about the podcast in a moment. So you saw the heartbeat, which is amazing. Now, I'm going to ask a difficult question now. At what point did you lose your twins previously?
It was about 10 or 11 weeks. So one actually had gone earlier, about sort of six. Then when we went for the other scan, which I think was about sort of 10 or 11 weeks, then the other one had gone. So to be fair, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it, that it is devastating. It doesn't get any easier as you talk about it. But there is also that practical side that we knew as a couple, an older couple going into IVF, that this was possibly part of the journey in order to get to what we want. And it's a horrible thing, isn't it, to think that, you know, so many people have to go through a miscarriage in order to get to the result that they want. And, you know, it's a
difficult thing.
You're absolutely right. And what a lot of people say, and I know that I've experienced this myself, is that even though, you know, and I'm saying this as well to remind people who are listening, that just, you know, no two pregnancies are the same, successful or unsuccessful, no two pregnancies are the same. And just because you have experienced a loss previously, it doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to experience that loss again. Now, obviously, people do experience recurrent miscarriage, and sometimes there are medical reasons why multiple losses will occur. And if that is you, then please make sure that you seek advice from your recurrent miscarriage clinic. Tommy's do amazing work around that. You know, make sure you are seeking the right medical advice around that. But for you and I sat here, Chris, our pregnancies, my previous one was not the same as my most recent one. Neither of my previous ones were the same as my recent one, because this one worked and that's amazing. But for me, getting past the point of the previous miscarriages was a huge milestone for me. And I hadn't had a heartbeat previously, but you had experienced the heartbeat previously. How did you feel when you were coming up to those, like the 6 weeks and the 10-week milestones? Were they specifically kind of important when it came to the pregnancy, or?
I think I sort of saw it. It's like a race where you don't actually win until you've passed every single stage. So I struggled to get excited at each stage. It was just one step closer to the birth, in a way. So at 6 weeks, I'm going, that's great, but I've got to get to 10. And at 10 weeks, you're thinking, well, that's great, but I've got to get to 18. And then, you know, at that stage, we're sort of dismissed into the big wide world, which I know you've talked about, that feeling of like, oh my God, what do I do now? I've lost all of my support network, which I think is huge. And you're in the NHS system and they looked after us brilliantly. But then at sort of 22 weeks, we're doing all of the tests for disabilities and the like, and you know that that is a normal part of what's happening at this stage anyway. But again, until all those tests came back, as you know, that thankfully sort of there wasn't any sign of anything untoward, I couldn't relax to the next stage, and so on and so on, which I do slightly regret, because you hear about people sort of just having a great pregnancy and starting to think, right, well, we're planning now. And my mind wouldn't just let me do that after. And I think a lot of it is the heartache that you go through in terms of a journey.
I completely agree. And I think that, like, many people will be nodding along, thinking exactly the same as all you're saying, because it is about getting through those stages. And I also agree that often people look back and think, you know, I wish I had enjoyed it. And I really try to encourage people to celebrate the fact that they're pregnant and to enjoy their pregnancy as much as possible. And I know that that isn't going to be the whole pregnancy, but it's about stealing back some of those moments from anxiety so that you can enjoy them. And that sometimes can be quite structured almost, or deliberately planned and deliberately exercised, but it still means that you get that enjoyment. And for anyone who wants to sign up to my 5 strategies to help enjoy your pregnancy, like, that's what this is about. It's about stealing back some of those moments from the anxiety so that you can enjoy them in the moment and have them to look back on.
I love that, stealing back, because I think that is so true, isn't it? You know, this, you have to be so careful that fertility treatment does not take over your life, and that you can still live your life and enjoy it and realise that you've got a relationship which fertility treatment is built on, rather than thinking about it the other way around. And there's a change in mindset where you've got to steal it back, isn't you? You've got to reset that and start thinking, do you know what? This will be a joyous experience. And I'm absolutely right to be realistic, and I'm right to be practical and cautious. However, you know, this is another stage of the journey now. So, yeah. I think you're spot on there.
Brilliant. Phew. But no, it's always good to hear that. So talk to us, like, heading towards the birth. Like, had you allowed yourself to think about the birth? How were you feeling? Like, your wife is hopefully blooming in front of you and feeling good overall.
Trish, she's a strong woman. She's energetic. She's, you know, just a real positive force. And quite often I can look at her and think, well, that's great. I can just take my lead from you. And you look like you're rocking it through this pregnancy. And I'd be the one going, do you know what? You don't have to be working 60 hours a week at the moment. And you don't have to be doing X, Y, and Z. She goes, I'm fine. I'm fine. Just let me get on with it. But we went in for, we're over 40. We get like an extra consultation with a consultant. Well, two of them actually. But they both sort of sat down and said, look, there's no reason why you can't just have a normal pregnancy and a normal birth. The only thing we probably would say is that you should be in the hospital rather than a home birth, but then it's up to you. That was all absolutely fine. Then, you know, effectively, Rosie was lying horizontal and refused to move, which no doubt I'm going to remind her of when she's about 13 as well. But But at the same time, at that point, they said, if she doesn't move, then we're probably going to have to go via a cesarean, which is ultimately what we had. And it was mixed emotions for me at that point, because all I wanted was Rosie out of there and safe, and Trish safe. So, of course, it would have been nice for us to go through the sort of the natural sort of birth and the like. However, I was so fixated in, do you know what? The process isn't the important bit here. It's the end result. So I'll take the advice. But in a way, I think I was so focused on that end result that even getting close to the birth, I do feel I missed out a bit. You know, we didn't do much planning of a nursery or all of that sort of stuff. But I have to say, we went to the NCT group, and as for many people, I think that's that moment you think, bloody hell, this is real. This is happening now. And it was nice for me to be surrounded by other guys for a change. And I think that was a point that I did start to get excited. And once I started to get excited, there was no holding me back. I think I was just like an eager puppy, just really looking forward to it, to be honest.
Oh, I love that. That does make me smile a lot. And yeah, I agree with the NCT. It is nice to have, because, you know, there aren't really many opportunities to talk to people, you know, who are pregnant. And I don't know about you. I'm totally just blanketing you with my take on this as well. So agree or deny, whichever works for you. But because we're a bit older, lots of our friends have had their children, and they're just, I didn't know anyone. So we had moved up to Cambridgeshire in 2014. So I was actually pregnant when we moved here, although I miscarried about a week later. But the people that we know around here are older, and their children are teenagers, university, beyond. Or we don't know them because they're at home with their little ones. And we kind of, you know, interact with a few, but we just run on different schedules, or ran on different schedules before we had Ren. And so in my local area, I didn't really know anyone who was pregnant or who had a baby. And so that was a really nice opportunity to kind of meet people at that stage. Is that how you found NCT?
Yeah, I think so. If you have a reality, I think when you're going through sort of fertility treatment and you can feel out of step, you know, a couple of my mates were going, blimey, my son's now 18 or 16. And even the ones that were still with young kids, you suddenly think, wow, you know, we're the ones that are out of step, you know, still off to able to go off traveling or hanging out with people that are 10 or 15 years younger than us, because they're the ones without children. And I think as you're entering that pregnancy stage and then through to it, you just suddenly think, god, yeah, who is that support bubble that's gonna provide us that support? So the NCT was important like that. I think just even having them at the end of a WhatsApp group, just to know that you weren't alone. But then it's strange, isn't it? I'm sure you found it too, that you can go through it thinking, oh god, I haven't got kids and I'm living this sort of separate path, and there's lots of people around me that have got sort of children. But as soon as you are in that, then it just flips again, and you find a new support network, and you find people that are able to help you out or give you advice or just go for a beer with or whatever it will be. And it's amazing, isn't it? Your vision almost changes from, it's almost a bit sort of narrow blinkered vision, and then suddenly you think, oh god, yeah, there are people that I can talk to about that. So we definitely found that, I think, as but of course, you know, having most of Rosie's first year in lockdown has also brought us challenges as well, because it really has been about Trish and myself. And I've been thankful that I've been able to be at home pretty much every single day growing up. But it's also meant that there has been less interaction from that wider support network, I think.
I think there are positives and negatives that have come out of lockdown. Similarly, Bob has been at home pretty much all of lockdown, and he was on furlough for a good while as well. And I know him and Ren would have had an amazing relationship anyway, but it's got to be better because they've spent so much more time together. Like, it's just, you know, and so that has been really special. But I'm sure, particularly for Trish, because she, I assume, would have been the main caregiver, so this is her maternity mm-hmm. leave, she has, and I'm using phrases that have been said to me from others, has had that experience of maternity leave taken away, really, or it's different to what was anticipated, because a lot of what was anticipated for so many people is the groups and are the like beginning of new friendships and the learning and the support and kind of, you know, the scary comparison in some ways, because I definitely felt that at some baby groups, but also the new learning and taking your little ones to those sensory classes and rhyme time. And there's lots of that still to come, obviously, but that doesn't mean that people who are listening aren't necessarily, like, you are allowed to grieve the loss of that expectation. And you have expected it and anticipated it for a long time as well. So for then that to be taken away because of something else, it's just, yeah, that can be devastating for some people.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think, you know, she can feel a bit shortchanged, you know. She thought, God, I've waited for this for so long. And I think she imagined being out, doing coffees, having some nice lunches, like you say, lots of different classes. And then suddenly she's stuck in a flat with me while I'm on the Zoom calls for 8 hours a day. And she's thinking, well, is this it? And of course, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you want to feel so blessed and so grateful for what you've got. And of course you are. But I think you're also allowed to feel a bit pissed off and a bit selfish as well. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, my gosh. Like, it is on my Insta wall. It's and, not or. You are allowed to think, exactly like you said, this is amazing. I can't believe that my little miracle is here. And I'm pissed off because it isn't like it was supposed to be. You're allowed to think that in the middle of the night. Oh, my God, I'm tearing my hair out and I just want you to go to sleep. And think, I bloody love you. You know, like it is and for sure.
Great way of saying it. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. And for anyone that needs to hear that, please, please, please hear that. It's and, not all. You're allowed to feel more than one emotion at the same time. So Rosie's here heading towards Christmas. We've talked about maternity leave. Just give us, before we talk about the podcast, what are the plans for Christmas? You have just moved, so there's no decorations up yet.
No decorations up yet. We've just moved to this old mill house, which is going to be amazing. Beautiful place for Rosie to grow up. Lots of sort of space for animals and the like. But the plan for Christmas is to make sure she's got a radiator in her room that works. That's definitely number one. And then number two, oh, it's got to be about friends and family. It's got to be about that. You know, there's a lot of people in the family that were with us for that whole journey. And just as excited as we are that she's around, that I think will be a big part. I've got one present. She won't be listening, but there's definitely one present that I've got for her. Seeing her name's Rosie and I love my music. So I've got an AC/DC whole lot of Rosie pink romper suit as well. So I think that's going to go down a treat on Christmas Day.
Perfect. She will thank you for that without question. But what you are doing, Chris, and the reason our paths crossed is that you have created a podcast called IVF Dad. And the reason that you've done that is because you want to, as we touched upon a little bit earlier, share that male perspective, which is so important. So talk to us a little bit about the podcast, because it's all recorded already and it's going to go live fairly imminently.
Yeah,
is
next
that right?
week or the week after, yeah. It's a difficult thing in a way for a guy, because you're there and you're trying to be the supportive partner and you're trying to be the coach as well. You know, come on, we can do it. We can keep going through it. And there is a bit of a tendency, I think, to forget about your own emotions as you go through, or tough it out. And as the sonographer looks on the screen and says, oh, see, can you see the uterus lining there? And can you see the eggs? And you go, oh, yeah, I've got that nailed. And you're thinking, I haven't got a clue what you're looking at, let alone the fact that then when the spotlight turns on you and you start to understand that over 50% of all fertility issues could be male related, rather than necessarily thinking, oh, well, you know, I'm here as a support, but it's not really sort of physically to do with me. And then finding out that you can be part of that issue, or the main reason for that issue, I think is stuff that's not really talked about or explored. So as I just went through this and I thought, if I come out positively at the other end, then I want to make sure that I can share the journey so that guys privately can just get a bit of a sense of what it's like going through each stage. So as you say, I've recorded 13 episodes and it really just charts the whole of the journey, right from that first consultation and great expectations through to that sperm test, the MOT, when you're getting that first assessment, through to needles and bruises and that process when you're trying to deliver hormone treatments and you're waking up in a cold sweat because you've gone under 2 milliliters less than the syringe amount and you're thinking, is this going to mean I don't ever have kids again? Through to how you deal with some of the challenges like loss or thinking about alternatives. So it tracks that story right through over sort of 4 or 5 years. But what I've also done is gone back to the hospital and spoken to the embryologists, the consultants, the nurses, the sonographers, just to get their perspective on different things, because it can be quite an intimidating experience as you're there. I don't know how you felt, but I sometimes felt embarrassed being back in the consultant's room again, going, oh my God, are we wasting her time? It's like, as the lever arch file just grows and grows and grows, and they now, oh, there are 3 lever arch files of your notes, not one. And just giving that perspective that actually they really care and they really do want a positive result and they're working for you. It's not just some transaction. So I wanted to do that from a male perspective. It's all recorded. It's just being mixed together with the interviews at the moment. I'm going to release 3 at once for the first batch, just so people can get into the story, and then release them weekly after that. Got a supporting website, ivfdad.com, and also IVFdad podcast on Insta and Twitter. And I just want to really start the conversation. I've got no other designs on it other than getting that out to some guys that it might help, helping share that and perhaps open up the conversation and, you know, sort of thinking about miscarriage from a male perspective, for instance, or thinking about how do you make the choice out of a sperm donor or an egg donor? How do you have those conversations? How do you manage relationships from a, you know, male perspective? How do you be positive but angry and upset at the same time? So I really hope it does some good, Kat. And yeah, I'd be delighted to get any feedback from your listeners as well. And if anyone thinks that they could benefit from it or think that they got a story to share, please get in touch because I'd love to hear from you.
Amazing. It is so, so needed. Like, the more we can talk about it, the better. And the more male voices we can add to that, then, you know, that is what we need to do. So I have no doubt that it is going to do wonders for the whole community, because as you mentioned earlier on, I think it is important for us females to get the male perspective on it. And I suspect that it will be good for all partners, really, male or female, to kind of have that voice. Because I was talking to Lucy and Amy, and that episode will come out in the next few weeks, who are in a same-sex couple. And it's, you know, like, it is about the partner. It doesn't matter about the sex. It's about watching someone you love taking the injections and going through the procedures. And often I think personally, and this was a conversation I had with them, I think it's harder to watch someone sometimes than actually to go through it yourself. So yeah, I think that that's going to be such an important conversation, and really fascinating that you've gone back to people like the sonographers and the embryologists and things to talk about them. I know that that is going to be fascinating. So thank you so much. Do, as Chris did that very well, go and check out, all the links will be in the show notes for IVF Dad podcast on Instagram or ivfdad.com, and check him out and give him a follow and do share, because I know that some of you will be listening and your fertility journey as far as treatment and things might be finished, but people that you follow, people that you know, they might still be involved in it and it might be for them to benefit from it. So please do share it as well as soon as it goes live. Thank you so much, Chris. I've really enjoyed chatting to you, and thank you for sharing your story about how Rosie became. And I just want to wish you, because I can now, even though I know someone might listen to this on the 1st of July and think it's not Christmas, but I am going to say it. I hope that you have a wonderful first Christmas as the three of you in your family.
Oh, thank you, Kat. That's amazing. And look, and thanks for everything that you do for the community. Honestly, I think you do a fantastic job, and you must be a great source of comfort to a lot of people out there. So Keep going.
Thank you. That means a lot. It really does. All right then, Chris. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.